Hey there, welcome to LSAT Demon Daily. I'm Ben Olson, that's Nathan Fox. We're the founders of LSATdemon.com and our weekly podcast, Thinking LSAT. We have a longer email here from Big A.
Hope y'all are doing well. I'm currently prepping for the October and November LSATs. I recently shook hands with the devil. Compelling. Okay. Harvard Law School admissions officers came and spoke to my school, which was arranged through our pre-law faculty. Thanks to your guidance, I approached with guarded skepticism. This was my first pre-law event. I attended out of curiosity to see where some of my peers were and the general guidance they will probably adhere to religiously. Here are some high-level takeaways. We've got a numbered list. There's four numbers on the list.
Oh, cool.
And then we've got a question in bold. But here are some takeaways from this meeting with Harvard Law School. Oh, they came and spoke to your school, which was arranged through your pre-law faculty. You must go to a decent school if Harvard Law School is showing up recruiting.
A big school. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Number one, one advisor from admissions came and spent the majority of the time hosting a workshop on writing. She explained that moving forward, Harvard Law School will transition away from one required personal statement and one optional diversity statement to two required statements, a statement of purpose and a statement of perspective. Basically, it's the same theme or concept as the original personal statement, but segmented into two different essays. She spent the majority of the time fielding questions about the scope of these statements as expected. So this is their response to the Supreme Court decision forcing them to not use diversity, or at least not use diversity the way they had been using it with their cut list and all that.
Yeah, if you call it a statement of perspective, then you're not maybe preemptively excluding some
it seems
people
to be following the diversity the guidance statement. Of the Supreme Court majority opinion, which was you can talk about diversity, but it has to talk about the actual impacts on their life.
Yep.
And so if you're giving a statement of perspective, then it's like they're trying to lead you down the path where you can tell them your stories of diversity in a way that are clearly relevant in an acceptable way to the court, what the court would deem, germane to the discussion of whether you're a good applicant.
I was wondering if they were going to use AI to like then just categorize everybody into a certain race groups. But then I think that would run afoul of the opinion, right? Then all of a sudden you're making it numerical again.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be really interesting to see if they're even reporting race anymore. Who knows? Okay. That's interesting. Thanks for that little bit of intel. Number two, one student asked about writing an addendum for working before law school. What is more surprising is this advisor said that it was totally acceptable to draft one for this purpose and even went on to explain how she typically recommends students write one for major increases in standardized test scores. Yeah, she couldn't even put the word LSAT in her mouth. She said a 10-point increase is something extremely surprising and something she would recommend writing an addendum for. I don't know who this person is, but I don't really believe them anymore. Cause I just don't. I mean, really? Why do you care? I don't think we know a lot of people at Harvard.
Yeah.
Did you guys write an addendum because you increased your LSAT? I'm curious if any of our Harvard Law, current students actually still listen to the podcast. I would love to know whether they wrote an addendum because many of them did increase their LSAT by 10 points.
Yeah. If it's ever required, we've always said, and I think it's still right, to write an addendum that says, I knew I could do better, so I took it again.
If it's required, yeah. But I would only do that if it was required. I mean, her recommendation that you write an addendum, you got to think about her incentives, which sometimes, this is still my number one hypothesis. You know what I'm going to say, right?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're going to say.
Well, sometimes, because I've fucking seen it. Like, I've seen students do it. So I know that this is a fact that people sometimes do this.
Overnight.
It happens all the fucking time.
Yeah.
That students write addendums that say, well, I wasn't accommodated on my first attempt.
Yep.
And as soon as I got accommodated, you know, then the LSAT wasn't a barrier for me anymore. And legally, they're not allowed to discriminate against you for that. But you just disclosed to them, you know, the asterisk that used to appear on your record 20 years ago when you got accommodations. But that hasn't been the case now for 15 years that or more. That has not been the case that they have any way of knowing that you got accommodations. This type of optional essay, though, is a way that they could, you know, they can invite you to, oh, yeah, tell us how you improved so much. Why do they want to know? Why do they give a shit?
We can't stop you from talking.
And if you happen to say, oh, you know, I got, that's when I got accommodated. Well, they don't have to discriminate against you for that, but could be something that would be on their mind.
Well, imagine two applicants, both have a 174, both have a 3.89.
Yeah.
But one has an asterisk next to it.
Yeah. Not a literal asterisk, but in the mind of this of this person, they'd be, well, okay, these are both really great applicants. How do we have to cut one of them? Because remember, this is actually, remember what this is a replacement for, right? This is a replacement for their LOP list. Now, that was for Harvard undergrad. But the LOP list that the Supreme Court of the United States took major offense to, that LOP list was like, well, we have too many good applicants. We now have to narrow this down. We have to LOP some people. We have to cut them off. And that's what they're looking for is a differentiator. Yeah. And if your addendum has this something in there about like, oh, yeah, well, I got accommodated. Okay, well, all right. We have to drop somebody. Might as well be you.
Yep.
Not saying they will do that. Some of them might be extremely high-minded and would never discriminate against you for that. Others might do it subconsciously or very consciously.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, later on, she let it slip that Harvard Law School does prefer candidates with work experience, but then tried to backtrack by saying it won't hurt you to apply straight after undergrad. I don't think that's surprising, right? That's not new news that Harvard Law School does prefer candidates with work experience.
Yeah, and I'm surprised she tried to backtrack.
Well, but okay, think about her incentives.
Oh, she wants you to apply before applying to somewhere else. Like, oh no, I can't get into Harvard, so you apply elsewhere.
Also, she might want to deny you. She's happy to deny you.
Yeah.
Right? It benefits her never if you don't apply. It benefits her always, no matter what. It benefits her if you apply. Because you're going to pay an application fee, or even if that's waived somehow,
they it's going to help their yield.
They get to deny you. Yeah. And if they deny you, then US News says, oh, you're more selective. You're a good school. And they bump the ranking of Harvard because of how many people they deny. Also, Harvard Law School is a gigantic law school, and they do need to fill that huge classroom every single year.
Yeah.
And so they want, they prefer work experience, but they'll take straight out of undergrad as well. And they'll definitely take your application. They want you to apply. Yes.
Yeah.
All right. Number four. One point I genuinely didn't roll my eyes about was her stance on application timing. She did acknowledge several schools giving merit-based scholarships early in the cycle, but differentiated Harvard Law School because they don't do that. From this point, she claimed that it wouldn't hurt an applicant to apply later in the cycle, even in January or February, and encourage students to take their time. Are there no benefits applying early in the cycle for schools that only give need-based aid? That's the question here in bold.
Some schools, yes, right? Some schools, there are no benefits. Like
But the Yale, schools that only give need-based aid, those are three schools.
Yale, Harvard, Stanford?
I thought it was just Harvard, Yale, Stanford that only give need-based aid. It might be one or two more schools, but okay, so fine. Like if it's true, if we take her at her word on this point, that there's really no benefit to applying in January or February to Harvard. Okay, fine. Maybe that's true of Yale, and maybe that's also true of Stanford, but there's just too many other schools out there fishing for the best applicants early in the cycle. And so I guess I don't care so much if you're only applying to Harvard. Yeah, but this advice in outside of that context, that advice goes nowhere, right? It's not.
That's helpful. Interesting. Actually, it helps Harvard for you to apply later.
I was going to say that too. Yeah, that if she's able to convince you that applying later in the cycle, you know, I just apply later in the cycle because that's true at her school, it also makes you a worse applicant at all those other schools where that's not true.
And then she can more likely grab you.
Yeah. Their incentives are to get you to apply this cycle no matter what.
Yeah. Yeah.
They want you to apply to their school this cycle no matter
their
what.
Their school now.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at all their advice, it's all oriented toward just as long, you know, like we're going to tell you the things that we want to tell you in order to get your application in the door right now.
Yeah.
And the incentives are set up that way. I mean, again, it makes their law school ranking go up when you apply. Whether they admit you or deny you, it makes their ranking go up when you apply.
Yeah.
So they, yeah, of course, they welcome your application this cycle always. Anyway, Big A continues. Thanks for all your help. You are the reason I could smell the bullshit that was sold today from a mile away and have a much better understanding of what it means to apply to law school compared to my peers. Best, Big A. I like that email. That was a longer one, but very thoughtful and well-organized and providing some useful intelligence from an event that we do want to know about.
Yeah, 100%.
Cool. Thanks for writing in.
Email daily at lsatdemon.com if you'd like to ask us a question or share some LSAT or law school admissions news. Thanks for listening.